Hi, everybody, and welcome to, well, what a way to begin, sorry. Welcome to our 50th, I think it is, Dissipation of Glamour webinar. During this time in the autumn, it's possibly a little bit irregular because of travels. I'll be going to the United States before long, at least that is the plan. And this coming week, we'll have to have an evening presentation. The schedule is in the morning, 5 a.m. GMT, but we'll have to have an evening because my train arrives in the south of Finland in the morning, and I would not be able to present it to you at that time. So let's we'll try to make a change in that schedule so that it registers for the evening time. By that time, I should be able to get set up. Well, I've also planned maybe to change our focus here a little bit, and we'll work on a different glamour, a major glamour. Of course, the illusion of separation, or the great heresy of separateness, and the corollary glamour, that goes along with it. Well, so many things are born out of separateness, but certainly the glamour of hatred that we've been working on, and we must still rotate and continue to work on it. But when we get there, we'll talk about the glamour we're going to deal with this evening here in Finland. I know it's a different time for so many of you, and for some weeks coming, because I think it is germane to the entire planet, really, not only to humanity. So it will be interesting. Let's just have a little alignment here. And this alignment looks at us as a willing group, making ourselves available wherever we may be. We come together in one focus of consciousness. And we feel, as increasingly soul-infused personalities, we feel our relation to each other. And forming a kind of group soul-infused personality, maybe not completely, because that really is a process complete at the fourth initiation, but increasingly so. And ready to work upon the clarification of the astral plane, so that it really becomes a reflector eventually of the love of the soul and the quality of the Buddhic plane. And no longer such a great obstruction to the illumined thought process of which the human being is capable. So we are coming together as rhythmically as possible, given some necessities in scheduling. And We work as the Tibetan has advised. Now, what I'd like to do here is discuss a very interesting and major, major, major glamour. This is the glamour of fear. It's not just found in humanity as a glamour, it's found in humanity because we need thought along with the sentient reaction, but it's found throughout the planet and in all the kingdoms. It's found certainly in the animal kingdom. That's something that is really shared with these two kingdoms, the fourth and the third. Recoiling reactions are found in the vegetable kingdom. And I think if we go deep enough into matter, there's something that is parallel to the avoidance response. I think there's an Indian scientist, his name is Bose. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it was a number of decades ago, and he did studies in metal fatigue and the reactivity found in the mineral kingdom, which we consider to be very inert, but really it's planet-wide. And it is, according to the Tibetan, the major dweller on the threshold for all lives, and especially the human, who can add to the sentient reaction the formulations of mind which intensify the recoil of sentiency. You know, I mean, we know that fear can prevent us from many advantages because our ring pass knot becomes frozen. And when we look at Leadbeater's explanation, his visions of the fear response within the astral body, it seems to be a very unpleasant thing to behold. Rather gray and gelatinous, and preventing natural radiation and creating an artificial ring pass knot, which prevents one from partaking of greater possibilities. I mean, we're supposed to ever be expanding our horizon in a Jupiterian sense, confident, always enlarging our inclusiveness, and the fear reaction, kind of a combination of Saturn and the moon in a way, freezes us and prevents us from understanding what we might otherwise be able to touch. It freezes us in our tracks and actually contracts and constricts and makes us less than we otherwise would be. We have to learn how to overcome this, and the Tibetan, I think, is very clear and very intelligent about how he describes this. So there's a few readings here that will prepare us to deal with the glamour of fear. I think we're all subject to it. I think if we were not subject to it, we would have taken the fourth initiation, which is a major breaking of a ring pass knot, which creates a great and new freedom of a solar kind. Fear is very lunar. It has a lot to do with the conditioning of matter in the previous chain, the moon chain, and perhaps the conditioning of matter in the previous solar system. People with a strong second aspect of divinity are very sensitive and very subject to it, but I think also it has its roots in the mismanagement of the third aspect of divinity. We're told that those who are prominently on the first aspect of divinity know what it is to be fearless. So we'll have to look at the corollary of the fearful response. We'll have to look at fearlessness, how it arises, the advantages of it, and we have some readings along that line. So we'll spend, you know, maybe, we'll see, maybe a few weeks here. I can't say for sure, but it's very definitely something humanity has to deal with, because so many of the ill-adapted responses of the human race are based upon subconscious fears, maybe fears that are not even recognized. We certainly have fearful events that have been occurring. They have struck fear into the heart of people who gather for concerts and other events. You never know when some person who has lost his contact with his human nature is going to rain death down upon you. So, you know, going into public, at public events, soccer games, baseball games, football games, you know, all the places where people gather is becoming increasingly a risk, and fear will be rising in the human solar plexus as a result of such things as we've recently witnessed in Las Vegas, almost unbelievable and still to be researched as to its roots. But anyway, let's get on with some of the things the Tibetan has said here. I think they'll be interesting. This is from a treatise on white magic, right around 297 to 300 or so. Fear. Okay. This is one of the most usual of the manifestations of astral energy, and is put first because it constitutes for the vast majority the dweller on the threshold, and in the last analysis is the basic astral evil. Well, those are pretty strong words. The dweller is always something that has to be passed through, and this presents a formidable obstacle for most people. I'm recalling in Agni Yoga that when the members of the Black Lodge find a truly fearless person, they consider it a very bad sign, because they know that they will have a dedicated enemy and one that does not recoil before their very frightening type of evil. Every human being knows fear, and the range of the fear vibrations extends from the instinctual fears of the savage man, based on his ignorance of the laws and forces of nature, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen to him next, and on his terror of the dark and the unknown, think of the jungle and what can prey upon you from the shadows, a huge loss of human life, we're told, was wrought upon the human kingdom in the early days by the animal kingdom. So those are, you know, basic instinctual fears in the mechanism, and DK has even in other places traced this also to a mystery within the etheric body. So we'll have to examine that, but basically it's part of the repulsion aspect that we find in the astral body. So all the way from these instinctual fears of the early man who's, you know, just opening up the first petal of the egoic lotus, to the fears so prevalent today of loss of friends, of loved ones, of health, of money, of popularity. Different ray types have targeted different fears here, but maybe all of us are somewhat subject to this. And on the final fears of the aspirant, which he does get into, it's very interesting, the fear of failure, having failed many times, of course, the fear which has its roots in doubt. Do we really live forever? Are we really a reincarnating being? Is death actually the end of everything? And we are naive in hoping that it is not. The fear which has its roots in doubt of our own immortality, I would say. The fear of ultimate negation or annihilation, I would say that's a major, major existential fear to be entirely wiped out. And that's what death so often represents for the unschooled, unpenetrating, non-penetrating individual, the average individual. It's the end, a brief period of consciousness, unconsciousness, an infinity of unconsciousness before, an infinity of unconsciousness afterwards, and just a brief span in which you exist as a being. Well, that's perhaps the average perspective on this, except, of course, that we do have heaven and hell entering into here, paradise, and those things that at least counter the annihilation fear. Although I do think, though, that being above all and its effect upon us fears annihilation. The fear of death, which he shares equally with all humanity, even the aspirant, is it really true? All the good things that are said about continuation. The fear of the great illusion of the astral plane, on the physical plane, we can pretty well manage the kinds of forms we're going to meet, but what types of horrors might we meet on the lower astral plane, in the hell worlds and so forth? It can be overwhelming. And the fear of the phantasmagoria of life itself. Well, one might as well just stay at home in bed and not venture out, if we're afraid of everything. But there are some people for whom that type of depression actually is occurring. And also, this is a little more sophisticated, the fear of loneliness on the path of being all alone, not having your desires met, cold and alone and unsatisfied, and the possible prey of many things that the group can protect you against, and even the very fear of fear itself. I'm reminded there of that great speech by Franklin Roosevelt. I'm not sure it was his idea, but he made it impressive. During the period of the Second World War, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. So we can see how fear simply multiplies until we're afraid of the very fact of fear. Well, he was right about that, because a person who's not afraid of the fear response can go through it on to victory, which eventually the Allied powers did under the guidance of such great disciples as he was and is. This list could be largely extended, but suffices to indicate the prevalence of fears of all kinds. They dominate most situations and darken many happy moments. So there's so much that we do not take advantage of because of our fear response. They reduce man, and this is quite an image. They reduce man to a timid and frightened atom of sentient life. I'm sure there's none of us that would like to be categorized in that manner. Standing afraid, before the stupendousness of the problems of existence, aware of his insufficiency as a man to cope with all situations, and unable to leave his fears and questionings behind and step into his heritage of freedom and of life. So I think we can understand that the initiatory process gradually rids a human being of fear, until at the fifth initiation we really do stand out as a solar being into a new level of freedom. It's kind of a Leo response with Uranus, the planet of liberation, powerful at that time, and we have overcome the three lower worlds, and we become the master in the three lower worlds, instead of a recoiling, tiny, gelatinous atom, quivering atom of sentiency. But we all have to go through that, and we will, and have, many, many times. This is a repeat performance, you know. There have been many universes, and as many victories as there have been universes. Often he is so ridden by fear that he becomes afraid of his very reason. Well, that's pretty subtle, isn't it? You know, that if we begin to think about things, we will be led astray. And so we get that sixth ray response where we cling devotedly to some sort of figure that offers us salvation, so we really don't have to think about all the unpleasant possibilities. DK says the picture cannot be too blackly colored, for fear is the dominant astral energy at this time. Not love. You know, and, well, we are presented with the great statement, perfect love casteth out all fear. I wonder how many of us have tried that or come close to it or realize the reality of that great statement. You know, it's the domination of the sun over the moon. It's the heart over the solar plexus. In the solar plexus and the sacral center, we do find the roots of fear. So the Tibetan is describing something here that's pretty bleak. For fear is the dominant astral energy at this time, and sensitive humanity succumbs all too easily to it. Well, you know, I can see that the way to do this stuff is so deep and so relevant that even one large paragraph like this is enough for us to think about, you know. I mean, every one of us has to be honest enough to go into our subconsciousness, it's kind of Kamba Manasik, and catalog or list our fears. You know, there may be the dominant fears of the aspirant, among which the fear of failure is a major, major one. Or we can have the more normal fears. Their name is Legion, and each one of us is responsible for discovering what it is that's holding us back. Because, you know, you can pretty well tell that if you are being held back, it's because of some deeply rooted fear that works itself out in other reactions, you know. You can say, well, really it's separativeness that's holding me back, or pride that's holding me back, or something like that. But if you dig deeply enough, you'll find the fear underlying those very unpleasant states of expression which alienate so many. You ask, he says, what are the basic causes of fear? To that question, if carried far enough back into the esoteric history of the solar system, there is no intelligible answer to be given. Well, there's an answer to be given. It's just not intelligible to the likes of us. Maybe when we're a master For a higher initiate, it will be more intelligible. Only the advanced initiate can comprehend. And that's not just the initiate, it's the advanced initiate. So we're dealing with at least the fourth or fifth degree. I'd say, you know, if we make it successfully through the fourth degree, we have overcome the major fears which plague humanity. So that lies ahead of us, that great barrier through which we have to pass with full confidence in the immortality of our nature. So only the advanced initiate can comprehend this. Fear has its roots in the warp and woof of matter itself. See, that's why I said it's connected with the third aspect of divinity. And we do find the factor of recoil operating even on the atomic level. You know, it has something to do with sympathy, empathy, harmony, vibration. You know, it probably it's mathematical at the root of it all. And is par excellence a formulation or effect of the mind principle and the result of mental activity? That is, once we reach the human stage, though it is, back in the old days, the human being was the macrocosm and had quite an effect on the lower kingdoms. That's something that's not appreciated by the standard evolutionist, which simply looks at the form and the form as it is now and not as it was then, when man was so very influential, especially upon the mammals of the time. The fact that birds and animals know fear puts the whole subject upon a wider footing than if it were simply a human feeling and the result of the activity of the functioning of the human mind. So, you know, in the relationship between the Lord of the animal kingdom and the Lord of the human kingdom, there is much distress and poor adjustment, which maybe is being worked out now, but there is terror in the animal kingdom and in the human kingdom, and they both share the animal body, and all of this is the result of maladjusted relationships between these two great beings, one working through the animal kingdom and the other through the human. It is not incident upon a man's possessing a reasoning mind. That would be one of the ways to work through it. If he uses his reason in the correct way, he could eliminate fear. And do we use our reason in the correct way? Do we think through thoroughly, and do we really believe, and are we convinced of our essential immortality and our ongoingness and our constant improvement over time? Now, this is really interesting. It lies in what is called cosmic evil, a high-sounding phrase conveying little. It is inherent in the fact of matter itself and in the play of the pairs of opposites, soul and matter. You know, it comes from a constricted consciousness which is powerless to ward off the forces that threaten its integrity. The sentient souls of animals and of men are subconsciously aware of factors such as, and I'll tell you what, this is the place, this is really interesting, but we're not going to deal with that right tonight. We'll deal with that the next time. It'll be 8 o'clock in the evening. It's very interesting. And we'll deal with that next Friday. But as I say, whereas our work will be done in the morning of next week, we'll give you a schedule and see how much we can do because we are traveling. The Glamour webinar will have to be done in the evening. So I'll ask Brett and Joe to make that correction, and I'll do my best to arrive in the south of Finland and get all the electronics set up so we can have our discussion of these very interesting factors of which both animals and men are subconsciously aware and which produce fear. And you know, you can see the first one, a terror of the final rending processes in the act of death itself. So DK is speaking as one who knows, he says, and we will listen, because let's just say that this glamour, which, you know, it's false understanding of the realities of life, and all kinds of misapprehensions about what the fate of the human soul is, all these things can be eliminated, and a much fuller and happier, more positive, more serviceable life can occur as a result of really knowing, rather than just, you know, recoiling, believing, fearing, retracting, you know, all these things which prevent us from really seizing upon our opportunities. So, okay, so that's that paragraph for discussion or any questions that you may have, you know, any thoughts, reactions, whatever. It seems an easy matter. You know, it's fear. We're just aware of fear in our lives, but, you know, what are we really doing about it? How are we overcoming it? Now, DK, we will be reading about that. He gives some quite good exercises on the overcoming of fear, you know, and there are different kinds of fears in their intensity. And some of the, you've read, many of you, a treatise on white magic, and you know that for the higher types of fears, or the more intense types of fears, even a connection with the entire hierarchy is advised, and the use of violet light. And for lesser fears, you know, connection with the soul can work. So we'll deal with those things, but we'll also try to become more fearless in our attitude, and that will have an effect upon those we meet, and we'll try to work on the astral plane, knowing we, you know, cannot possibly eliminate this major, major astral evil or astral glamour at this time, but we can make a dent in it, so to speak. You know, we can increase our own positive attitude towards these things and perhaps influence others in an occult manner. So that's what we're going to meditate on tonight, the glamour of fear. And it will never be far away, you know. It'll always be easy to find, very accessible. Very accessible. So, does anybody have a thought written or spoken or anything that you would like to share? And Michael, it looks like I see you there. And there you go. Okay, Michael Stacy, go ahead.
Hello, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
We've got this list of fears, and I was thinking that perhaps we can look at them as pairs of opposites as well.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, people are afraid of death, but then people are also afraid of living. People are afraid of failure, but they're also afraid of success.
Yeah.
And so we can look at all of these and just go one side to the other, and we, to overcome these, perhaps we see that the polar opposites are all an aspect of the same thing.
That's interesting perspective. It reminds me a little bit of that speech attributed, well, Nelson Mandela spoke it, but maybe the author was someone else, about fear of our own greatness or fear of our own success, that idea, rather than just the fear of failure. Yes, so the polar opposites are involved here, and there's many things in our life that we should welcome joyously, and yet the fear response is there. So we can look at that when we look at these the next week. I think it's an interesting way to consider it. yes, I recall a story about the philosopher Nietzsche. He was, you know, a great appreciator of music and knew something about it, and I think could, you know, he was found seated at the piano by some of his friends in complete despair because he had grasped this idea of eternal recurrence. Now, I don't know whether the recurrence that he grasped was the idea of successive universes and their repetition, always with a difference, or whether he felt, and this is what I think that I intuited from this, that everything was fated and would repeat exactly in the future as it had in this particular instance of a universe acting out its principles. So in other words, the fear of endless repetition came upon him. There are very many subtle fears. To us, we look at the future and say, ah, endless universes, always new opportunity, always new methods of expression. But for him, it was a horror. So, you know, looking at this from the pairs of opposites, I think is something of considerable value. So we'll do that, Michael, next time. And
thank you.
You bring up that subject in case I get too much into these ABCs and all that. Okay, very good.
Okay.
You bet. Thanks, Michael. Okay, Olivia, please go ahead.
Hi, Michael and everyone. Well, I was actually in Las Vegas this weekend, and I was there for a celebration and to see Celine Dion. And but fortunately, I came back to Denver Sunday afternoon. So, you know, my time there was with friends, beautiful experience, the Bellagio fountains, art, that kind of an experience. But I had one of my sons was traveling in Asia and didn't know when I was coming back and was frantically searching for me. So he finally called my Denver house in the middle of the night and woke me up and told me what was going on there, which was just incredible. But so I, like everyone else then, turned on TV and just saw the terror there, you know, the definite fear, the horrific experience going on, or had gone on. And then, you know, just, I mean, the fear was palpable because the danger was so real. But then, you know, it's continued on. And of course, we know it was also an amazing time of people doing heroic deeds to help one another, so that it brought out the good in people. But this idea of fear and just the idea of how it continues to permeate after someone has experienced that, either in real life or vicariously, you know, continues on. It remains a very potent factor, and the more times you watch these things, the greater the increase can be, and people think, well, you know, could this happen to me, kind of a thing.
Exactly. And, you know, it's sometimes a strange reaction of the survivors wondering why it is that they survived and others did not. And the, you know, the delayed stress syndrome, you know, they may have gotten through the whole thing on some kind of high and done very good things. And later they find themselves totally beset by what happened. Well, we're still in the process of solving this thing, but all the pictures told the story. And you can only imagine yourself, you know, any one of us in such a situation. You never know exactly what you're going to do. You just don't know. Some people found themselves racing into the fray and saved a number of people, and others just, you know, got out of there the best they could. And others were probably immobilized. So that's the kind of world, you know. Pluto is active now before the reappearance of the Christ, and is dragging the lower levels of the astral plane right, you know, into our sight. And we have to expect this. And also in the book of Revelation, it basically tells us that this will happen. So the sort of precipitation of these lower levels. So it's going to be very interesting to see what was the motive of this individual, whether it was just a slow build up of hatred, or whether there was some radicalization, or whether there was possession. You know, that too is possible. But it was a very, very long time in the planning. So I hope it unfolds very rationally, and so we can all understand this. But it's a big one. The fear response is a big one. And the thing about fear for many of us is that they really are subconscious. They have to do with events that occurred long ago, and we may not be aware of the roots of them because they lie in previous lives. So when we start recovering our past lives, as will be the case in the new esoteric schools, we are told, the techniques will be given for the recovery and study of past lives, we'll see the roots of some of these fear reactions. Meanwhile, we have to follow the process the best we can, according to the Tibetan. So anyway, you know, you're not a are you a country music enthusiast? It probably
No. I wasn't going there at all. I was a Celine Dion concert goer. Yes. Up at the other end of the strip by the Bellagio. Yeah.
Well, it's really, there's so many political things around it as well, you know. So, and it represents, you know, the country music. Some of it's really, really good, but it does represent the sixth ray component of our country and the very conservative component. And you know, we'll see if that's the reason why it was targeted, without the aggressor using those words exactly, but if whether that was behind him. Much remains to be revealed. Thank you, mm-hmm. Olivia. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, let's see now. We have a couple of people. Okay, Stacia. Stacy, you are self-muted, so you have to press your own mute button off if you'd like to speak.
Because
I've pressed your button off, so from my perspective, you can speak, but you've self-muted yourself. So you have to find that little microphone and press it until it becomes green. Okay. I don't know if I can... Well, I'll tell you what, you experiment with that a little bit. I'm not sure what happened there, but you can write out something if you'd like to, if it's not possible to speak. But anyway, your microphone, there it is, it's still red. Anyway, just try to make it green. Well, do your best. Okay, and let's see. Do we have a question here?
Yes, we have a couple questions from SR.
Statement, SR. The epigenetics of trauma is beginning to be more recognized. For instance, inherited and environmental effects from African slavery and generational effects of racism, among other things. Yes. Generational effects of trauma, etc. Not unrelated to present effects stemming from cosmic evil. It's a good points, and because you know a lot of these things have a group effect, and when certain populations are subjected to, you know, miserable conditions, it can permeate the psyche, and we know that mind and matter are deeply related, so you know it will have its physical effect. Roberto Assagioli, that well-known psychiatrist who was part of the Tibetans groups, said every thought has its physical outworking, no matter how minute. We have been subjected to so many things in our thousands of lives, and DK said it's a good thing, you know, it's all kind of under the surface, but it says, he said, it can be whipped up into a great cauldron, you know, of very unpleasant activity, which can begin to overcome the consciousness. Well, we do want to deal with our subconsciousness, and on the path we have to, and we have to recall our lives and our tendencies which led in proper directions and those which led in destructive directions. All of that's coming for us. But at the same time, we have to learn, you know, to deal with this particular life and take those tendencies as we may feel them and turn them into some positive direction. Later, I think we'll be able to face the origins of them. I think it'll be quite a horror show for some of us in some places. We've all died violent deaths. We've all been subjected to some terrible circumstances. I'm sure we've all been eaten by wild animals and all the rest of it. Some pretty horrific things if we do not know how to go into the, I'll call it the extractable soul, the soul that can withdraw from physical circumstances. More and more we're going to understand that. So, all right, all of these things are emerging. Thanks for bringing these to our, it's the mind-body relationship, really. And the body finally takes hold of what the Kama Manas cogitates upon, and we then have the secret in the etheric body. We'll discuss that a little bit later. Thanks, SR. Okay, any other thoughts here before we get into our work? Okay, well, you know, it's something that's going to affect all of us. There's just, if we were fourth degree initiates, the normal fears which plague humanity would be eliminated. They would be eliminated. But we're not there. And so even though we are aspirants and disciples, we are subject to these fears which prevent us from grasping opportunity as we could and should. So that particular limitation, the fear response, has to be turned for all of us into fearlessness. It's going to be a unique path for every one of us, unique. And, you know, hopefully before long we will incrementally achieve the conquest of fear. Now, I'm trying to look here. Oh, goodness, Stacia, there's something going on there. You know, what I would suggest is I've sent an audio pin to you, and you have to insert it. But if this doesn't work, I'm going to suggest that you have a little exchange with Brett, who might be able to, or Joe, who might be able to help you if there's any kind of communication problem. You know, sometimes this GoToMeeting has its own idiosyncrasies, and it depends on what kind of computer we're on and what sort of network we're on, and a lot of different things. But we will all have a chance to say our part as we continue. All right, well, I trust that we're all convinced of the importance of this issue. And if we are really, really honest with ourselves, we will find deep-seated fears rooted in the subconscious to the extent we can have the acuteness to evoke it without having it overwhelm us. You know, DK tells us when Pluto is active, when Scorpio is active, the factor of memory, of ancient memory, is evoked. And these memories are coming through dreams and visions and other methods of impressing the consciousness can carry the signature of past lives. So he says, you know, be careful about dreams, about too premature an entry into them, because they can carry all kinds of things that the individual may not be ready to deal with. But, you know, we are aspirants and disciples. We're all aspiring. We're all trying to train ourselves here. And, you know, we should be fearless enough to go into these things. I remember, you know, I had Pluto opposite a significant factor in my chart. I think it was the sun. Anyway, it was a Pluto period, and I went into Jungian psychology, and every week I drove about 350 miles round trip to go through a Jungian analysis, which you had to do if you wanted to become a Jungian psychotherapist, which was my original bent. Later, of course, occultism took over, but I slept with my tape recorder, you know, and every dream, every image, everything that came up, I just reached and recorded it, you know. Maybe I was in sort of a trance state, half awake. But the kind of detail that you can find in your unconscious mind, the things that you might never come in contact with because they're buried so deep, Pluto will bring them up. And you'll find a lot of things there that are not pleasant, you know, because they maybe are unredeemed and from a long time ago. So, you know, if you want to go deep enough into depth psychology, you can do that. But DK recommends something other. He recommends the full contact with the soul and the sort of flushing of the entire psyche and energy system with the power of the soul. It kind of reminds you of Hercules in Aquarius, where he takes the two rivers and he cleans out everything that has been accumulated over, you know, many, many thousands, even millions of years. So depth psychology is one way to go, and, you know, you have to know something about it. Normal adjustment psychology is another way to go, and then the psychology of the soul, very important to have real soul contact, and the soul energy does the cleansing, the soul energy does the healing. It was an interesting period, and one not to be repeated. Okay. Alex, there you are. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, okay. What does DK say about psychotherapy and psychology methods of digging around in the past? Right, 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 right. Well, he says we're in the new schools, we are going to learn how to reclaim past lives, and I suppose the significant ones. Not all of them are really significant, and in some of the earlier ones, we make such little progress that they could hardly be worth the study. But they're, you know, as we've reached the period of intelligence, more and more of these are possible. Sorry. Well, work with Brett and Joe and see if you can. Brett, contact Alex, please, or Joe, and let's see if we can help her. She's saying she knows.
That's Stacy.
Oh, is that Stacy? Okay. Then Alex can hear. Thanks, Brett. I know people who work in ancestral healing, and it seems like a very, very delicate business today. Yeah, I think it is. So I think what Jung discovered before he undertook his vast explorations of the psyche, that he had to have a tremendous anchor on the physical plane, and I presume an anchor in the self, what he called the self, before he could do it in a manner where he would not lose his balance. It was an amazing experience for him, and he had a nervous breakdown, what they call that, you know, during that period, and he foresaw the First World War and all the slaughter, and he ventured into the psyche like a real explorer, but he knew enough to anchor himself on the physical plane and to anchor himself above so that he would not be swept away. So DK goes into the discussion of these different methods of psychological relief, but finally he opts for the occult method in which soul contact clarifies the situation. Soul energy clarifies the situation, and the so-called, you know, mucking around in the past forever, and even adjustment from the point of view of the normal personality, these are included, but they are in a way not the emphasis. In esoteric psychology, we are given the methods. Okay, friends, I think it's time. So let's do that. Well, by the way, I want to say that tonight, in another couple of hours, I'm going to be broadcasting the Libra solar fire ritual meditation oratorio. What is it? Is it a musical? Is it a meditation? Is it an oratorio? What is it? Well, it's all those things, and it lasts a good while, but through oratory and meditation and song and whatnot, we may get a sense of the journey of the soul in Libra. We've already had many, many Libran incarnations, okay, from the very beginning all the way to the highway into Shambhala, the center of perfect peace where Libra reigns. It's a very important shambolic sign. So in this service meditation with music and so forth, I'll be meditating with you, whether you're one person or 10 or 20 or however many may want to come and join me. I always am there trying to make it more deeply impressive upon our understanding. So inside the chat box, you have the link if you want to join. It'll be at 8 o'clock GMT, so really another couple of hours from now. Okay, now, where are we? Yeah, here is our formula for the dissipation of glamour. It's going to be the glamour of fear. So we will pause as we begin to take in those who are present. There's some 30, 31 of us here. And we come together in the silence. Realizing ourselves as an instrument for hierarchy and related to each other through soul energy and not so much through personality energy. And so when you're doing this with your smaller groups, you can go through the full 10 minutes of silence recommended. Now we're going to use the cross of divinity, which involves the eyes. And we say this aloud. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. We see the radiating cross of divinity, which is our protection for workers in this tainted field of the astral plane. And we go through a kind of preparation where we raise the vitality of matter to the mental plane. That's the light of matter. And the light of the mind. And we fuse these two imaginatively. The light of mind and the light of matter. We contact the soul, and we attempt to recognize soul light. Which is real and present. And we bring it down into the lower mind, and we fuse imaginatively the soul light with the light of matter and the light of mind. So the three come together, the three come together on the mental plane. And that's going to be our searchlight, our weapon, our means of discovery, our means of dissipation. And having done this, we will say together this affirmation, followed by the sacred word, visualizing the light, the triple light is one, which we have imaginatively created. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light which turns the darkness into day. Oh. Now we're going to use the formula, and we visualize the great searchlight we are turning on out into the astral plane. It's not our astral body so much, it's the astral plane per se, and we visualize the light going forth from us as a group, but particularly our Ajna Center and the group Ajna Center. These are the sources of radiation. And so we say together while we visualize. Radiance are we, and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light, we work and turn the darkness into day. So the searchlight is visualized. The astral plane is not a clear place, the Tibetan tells us. Fogs and mists and clouds and darkness at present are found throughout. We have created our searchlight, and we strengthen our searchlight with the spiritual will. We draw it down from the will petals and from the inner bud of the egoic lotus, from the atmic plane where spiritual will is found, making the divine plan possible, and even we can at least visualize it from the monad itself. The will descends into the triple light as one, we imagine that happening. To fortify our beam, our revelatory beam, our disruptive beam, fortified by the will. And we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And now, the words of power. The glamour is the glamour of fear. And so, As we utter these words of power, we visualize the light penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and dissipation. The power of the united light, the power of our united light, prevents the appearance of the glamour of fear. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of fear from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. And we will take our usual 5 minutes here of silence and intensity of purpose. And in our own way, we will see the work proceeding using the indications of the words of power. This is going to be a powerful glamour. It is well established, deeply rooted in matter, and we have a lot of work to do within ourselves and on the astral plane. And if we find ourselves in thus working, being affected more by fear, we simply use the Tibetan's methods found in a treatise on white magic. You can find it in the index and we'll go over it. And we have increasing confidence in the immortality of the inner God, which we are. So then we withdraw our beam, our weapon of revelation and of dissipation, bring it back to the mental plane, turn it away from the astral plane, and the searchlight is then shut off. And then we will close by sounding the Om, the sacred word, three times. Seeing for humanity a healthier mind, a healthier astral body, a healthier etheric physical body, undergoing clearing by the soul energy, and so that the soul energy can increasingly manifest through every one of us and through the human race as a whole. Mind, emotions, and body. Thank you for your participation in our Dissipation of Glamour webinar number 50. We'll continue with number 51, and it'll be next Friday. It'll have to be, as I say, in the evening, because we're arriving in the train station at the same time as we would normally be broadcasting. But it will be a morning week, as many of those as we can possibly broadcast. We'll let you know. And tomorrow it'll be more emergency work, I think, because in our Soul of the Nations work, we try to evoke the soul of various nations, and especially those in which crisis is occurring. And then on Sunday, Attracting Money for Hierarchical Purposes. We'll be doing that. And in another hour and a half or so, those of you who have fortitude can join me in the presentation of the Libra Solar Fire Ritual Oratorio. And the link is here in the chat box. So thank you. Everyone, and we'll be working continuously on these matters, because it's important for the word to go forth over the ethers. And once long ago, I said to one of my classes in Australia, look, I know it's late, but I have a lecture to give, and if there's nobody here that can stand it, I'll give it myself, with myself as the only audience. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened, and I did give the lecture. At least it went out in the ethers. So thank you, and we'll be seeing you next time as you can manage. All the best, and many blessings from Tuya and me and Olivia. We want this thing to go forward, the dissipation of glamour work. So, bye-bye for now.